ladies and gentlemen, we will conclude this part of the entertainment with a brand new song sung here in Chicago for the first time on any stage by myself and company. He camp town lady, sing this song.
Do-da, do-da.
He camp town racetrack 5 miles long.
Oh, do-da, day.
I come down die with my hat caved in.
Do-da, do-da.
I go back home with a pocket full of tin.
Oh, do-da, day.
Wine to run all night, wine to run all day. I bet my money on the bobtail nag, somebody bet on the bay. The long tail filly and the big black horse.
Do-da, do-da.
They fly the track and they both cut across.
Oh, do-da, day.
The blind horse sticking in a big mud hole.
Do-da, do-da.
Can't touch bottom with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, do-da, day. Wine to run all night, wine to run all day.
I bet my money on the bobtail nag, somebody bet on the bay.
For the Kemp Town races. Yeah, that was Al Jolson, that Negro Jew singing up there in Chicago, Andy. Let's get on with the old time Negro hour here. I got some stuff to play here for you that I recorded off of the radio. Terrible Tommy here, White Aryan Resistance Radio, and it is a Monday, Moon's Day of the 25th. This month is almost over, so if you want to do something and you got something itching, you better do it now because you only got 5 days left. Yeah, maybe six. I'm not sure. I didn't keep track. So here we go with the old-time White Aryan Resistance Negro Hour.
He done put it up against somebody's back like he signed an autograph. He signs it on a table. And they pulled out a table and had him sign it. And that's what the scripture means. Thou preparest a table. The Lord prepared a table for his enemies to sign a bill that he would have a national holiday. That is the point. And in this piece, in the new book, Killing King, the multi-year effort to murder MLK, David A. Love essentially reviews it and is saying it is offering some more compelling evidence of the role the FBI played. Right, David?
Yes, indeed, because, you know, the fact that the FBI destroyed these documents against the law, we might add, because they, you know, you're not supposed to destroy official documents. But, you know, this book provides some hints as to, you know, other things that might have happened. But,
that's right.
You know, but then you have to ask the question, will we ever really know what happened?
Right.
And I certainly hope we do.
Perhaps after we're gone. I think the documents on Kennedy King are supposed to be released, what is it, 2035? Did I get that right? So how old would I be in 2035? Well, I may still be here. Because that's another 20-year movement. And you write in your piece how, you know, he called Dr. King the most notorious liar in the country.
Yes.
See, y'all, calling a black person a liar is another form of racism. We're all a bunch of liars. We just lie.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to slavery. Because when the master would say, where you been, boy? And we would answer, you're lying. Remember in 12 Years a Slave?
Mm-hmm.
When Lupita came back home? And they said, where you been? She said, I just went to go get some soap. And they accused her of lying. See, we always lie. We can't be believed. I was in the airport waiting a part of my family to arrive for my grandmother's funeral. And Obama was having the press conference that day on, that was on the 29th, on gun violence. And, they, you know, they had the airport screen, TCNN was on, and a number of people in Nashville, predominantly white, were watching that TV screen. And then I'm standing there, and of course, they're all looking at me. I'm there with my dreadlocks. Dreadlocks ain't too common in Nashville. And I had them up in, you know, in my bun, as I do sometimes, which also makes me look like across, probably to them, across between a Jamaican and a Sikh, you know, hair in a bun, you know. So, you know, I've got to be a terrorist on sight. And I got a gray beard, too, so that's the Arab. Arab, Sikh, African-American. Arab, Sikh, Jamaican. All wrapped up into one. Everybody's acting scared. So one of the Europeans who was watching on television said, somebody squawked and said, what are you looking at? Looking at Obama tell his lies. See, we're liars. King was a liar. Obama's a liar. All we do is lie. People call him Ms. Mark, you're a liar. That's a very common thing said about African Americans. We are liars. And that is because of the color of our skin that people call us that people say that. And so when J. Edgar Hoover said King is the most notorious liar in the country, that was what, you know, we lie. That's all black folk do. We lie. We're shiftless. We're dishonest. We're untrustworthy. Scoundrels. Wretched of the earth. Liars. And that's what, you know, that Hoover was saying. He also says in the Tudor David A. Love with his 86699 series, he also said that the Civil Rights Movement, listen to this, folks, was the greatest threat to national security since the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Now, that's because closeted, gay J. Edgar Hoover was fearful that this was the second Civil War, that the country would forever be changed because of the Civil Rights Movement. He was right. And if they had allowed the leaders to live, they had allowed King and Malcolm and Medgar Evers and Bobby Kennedy to live, I think we'd be looking at a very different America today. Don't you think, David?
Oh, no question about it. And, you know, I'd also like to add that, you know, some people argue that Hoover was also a closeted black man.
That's true. I didn't get that. I was getting that right. He was passing. Which circumstantially makes sense. It also describes some of his behavior.
Yeah.
Because what passing Negroes in D.C. did back in those days was cover themselves in case they got busted.
That's right.
That's, y'all know, you know, Hoover could never be fired. He served with like 6-7 presidents, right?
He sure did.
Nobody in the history of the world has ever served that many presidents because he had the dirt on all of them. He had Franklin Roosevelt's affairs, all of that. And they said, look, you got to go. He brought him a file, brought him a manila envelope. And then they said, okay, let him stay. And that was also leveraged so that if they said, well, look, we're going to try to get rid of you because you're secretly black and gay, he'd bring that envelope back out. Okay, let him stay. So that was what he was doing at the time. That was what he was, what he had going on. And, yeah, I mean, well, let me put it this way. It's not just some random. A family has come forward, a black family, that is his family, and they say that J. Edgar Hoover was a member of their family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to, I mean, who am I to, who are we to say they're lying? Like, of course, they must be lying because they're black. That's all we do is lie.
Of course.
But there's been no controvertible rebuttal to that. And so that is the case. But as a result of his martyrdom and his service, of course, we have this holiday, and it's something that we celebrate every year, and we're thankful to do.
The black community one day will appreciate its economic power. You know, the trillions of dollars that the black community has. If we really put our heads together and really had some organization and some strategy, along with allies, we could really turn things around. So I agree with you that that is definitely a way to go, because here it is, 2016, and we're still fighting these same battles. And you have, you know, these people, these recalcitrant folks who are the gatekeepers of these different industries, and particularly looking at the movie industry, something's got to change. But I also would say that while we agitate and protest, we also need to do what we can to have our own films out there, to make sure that the community pools its resources, to make sure that we have the types of films out there that we want to watch if other people are not going to do it. And I might also add that we have to make sure that we recognize the achievements of our own, and you know, give the awards when others will not recognize us.
I'm just looking at this article in Ad Age. A movement to persuade viewers to boycott this year's Oscars broadcast may be gaining steam, and while a mass tune-out could take a bite out of ABC's ratings, it's far less likely to have an impact on the network's advertising business. Now, that's why. That answers my question. That addresses what, let's go after the advertising business. Just not turning it on isn't going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
They're still going to get ads. People still going to buy money. And trust and believe, last year ABC booked over $100 million in Oscars ad inventory. Among top sponsors, Cadillac, JCPenney, Samsung, American Express, Coca-Cola, Sprint, AT&T, and Google. Kohl's has announced that it is going to replace Penny's as the broadcast's official retail sponsor. We need to go to Kohl's. Hey, Ms. Kohl's, we're not going to support your business because you're advertising on the Oscars. Kohl's doesn't want that. They don't want that trouble. Pull out. And all the other advertisers. Then that's, you got some bite. You have some teeth in your bite. I don't think anybody hears me, David. I may have taken a leave of absence just to organize this myself.
Yes.
Did I take a leave of absence to do that? I need a legal ruling on that. Because this is appalling. And we need to be intelligent and strategic. Samsung, American Express, Coca-Cola, Sprint, these were all last year's advertisers. They need to be made to understand that if they advertise on these Oscars again, they will feel it in their pockets. And they need to be identified as enemies of Black Lives Matter for advertising on a lily white Oscar broadcast. And Chris Rock does not matter. He is the host. He's just up there shucking and jiving for the camera. You know, I mean, that is, which I also think is ridiculous. He shouldn't be doing that. He shouldn't allow them to use him. That's supposed to make us feel better. That we got a black host cracking jokes, no less, making folks laugh. Hee hee hee. Ha ha ha. Scratching where it doesn't itch. That's what Step and Fetch It did in Hollywood. We don't need that anymore.
Mm-hmm. And then what's interesting is that you have the president of the Academy who is a black woman.
Another Step and Fetch It. Stephina Fetch It. No, Aunt Jemima, that's what she is. Y'all know that pancake bottle? That's her. That's her. When you pour that pancake, think about her on that page. She may just paste her picture on the pancake bottle. I need to do that. But don't you think that's something we need to be talking about?
No question. I think that it's the right time because you know, we might as well. We have nothing better to do. I mean, you know, we're faced with attacks from all sides, and I look at this as being tied in with everything else that's going on, mm-hmm. with you know, with the violence against us in the streets, with the poisoning of our children in Flint, and
right.
just so many other things. It seems as if, you know, in the midst of what we see as some forms of progress, there's also a backlash at the same time. And, you know, people don't want to see change, but the change is coming,
yeah.
and it's just a matter of time.
866-99-SIRIUS, 866-997, Boone Isaacs, that's her name.
That's right.
The Mrs. Butterworth of the Academy.
that's a tough job, I must say. I don't know how she does it.
Cheryl Butterworth Isaacs is the president of the Motion Picture Academy. 866-99, let's get some calls in. Joe is in.
You know, when you speak of movements, my mind starts to tingle. And as we know, we do have a lot of black-owned companies out here in the world, and we have some very, very good company, money-making companies. And they don't advertise. We don't have that code word to let us know that this is a minority-owned company. Would it be bad for a company to, you know, speak that they're minority-owned? You don't have to be black, just minority-owned. Because basically,
you want people to admit they're minority-owned? Who doesn't do that?
Yeah, when you deal with a lot of the advertising, like when you deal with some of the advertising, Kohl's and JCPenney's and things like that, you know, you're talking, you know, corporations and things such
right.
as that.
Right, who can afford to advertise on the Oscars? I mean, those ads are cost as much as Super Bowl ads.
Right.
No minority business can afford that advertising.
Correct. But what I'm saying is that if we as consumers knew who the minority owners were, what products they put out, things such as that, other than, you know, you have some self-individuals that do go out and take the initiative to go on the Internet and investigate, but most of us don't. Let's be real. If they bought it out in a sense, then we are able to back them more. Well, they'll be able to get that money. And I would say from their
I agree with that. I mean, but I think that's a different conversation. That is digressing, because right now, let me just say this to you. Let's talk about minority ownership. You ready for this?
Okay. Yeah.
We are minority owners when it comes to Hollywood. We keep Hollywood afloat. We spend our money to keep these movies going. So you want to talk about asserting your minority ownership asserted in Hollywood. So let's stay in the context of this subject. Since that's our money,
okay.
since we buy these okay. tickets, and we're not being recognized for our talents by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, then we need to say to these other big corporate businesses that the money we spend going to these movies and the money we spend on your products as consumers, we're shutting all that down.
I stand very corrected. You made a lot of sense there. Absolutely. You are right. You're absolutely right. Thanks for taking my call. You're absolutely right.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I listen to your show all the time when I'm traveling.
Thank
but
you.
I'm back to the district now. I got back here, so I didn't have to go anyplace else this week.
I know that's right. You definitely won't be either.
I was going to ask you a question about something. You know, I think obviously you can tell I'm white, but the question I've got is this. The critic for the London Daily Mail, who's a black fellow, brought up the thing I saw in today's paper. In fact, I saw it in New York Times, and commented that the reason why that basically this is that he talked about all the different actors that have won all the back in Sidney Poitier back in '63, But that this year, there weren't, in some of the value judgment, he says, but some of the actors were not as good as their white counterparts. But, you know, and that's, and I think basically, I'll be honest, I think the approach that you're talking about, this is boycott, it would be like picking a white basketball player to play in the NBA just to have more white basketball players, even though he probably is not as good.
You know, first of all, that's absurd. Have you seen, what movies have you seen with black actors and actresses this year?
I saw Creed, one.
That's the only one you saw?
Well, I did see The Hateful Eight.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. So, you don't and I don't know if that may came out in time with Oscars. You don't think, think Creed's director and its star are worthy of an Oscar nomination?
That's not what he's saying. He's saying it's a subjective. Now, granted, I understand that the Academy only has two, non-white people on the Academy.
And that's okay? That's okay?
I'm not saying that's okay, but I don't think that's a reflection on the advertisers. I mean, the advertisers have nothing to do with this.
Well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. It's about power. It's about influence. And you do, and so you might be doing the advertisers a favor. Hey, Mr. Advertiser, hey, Kohl's, you really want to be a part of this lily white establishment? No, I'm out.
But if it's lily white because of the quality of the actors and actresses.
But it's not. It's not lily white because of the quality of the actors and actresses. And we know that.
Can I ask you how you know that?
Because you just said you saw Creed. And those individuals were worthy of an Oscar nomination.
But that's not compared to any all the other movies and actors that are out there. That's what this guy in England.
Okay, so then, sir, let's be clear, Bill. You feel that no African Americans were worthy of Oscar nominations in 2014 and 2015. That's your position. You agree with the Academy.
Let me phrase it.
I know. Clean that up. That's what you're saying.
I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying. You're turning my words around.
I don't think it's wise for you to quote some Uncle Tom reporter in London Daily Mail, who obviously is still just trying to get access so he can get some interviews. See, people do that now. They say stuff so they can maintain act, right, David? So they can keep getting interviews from people. The Academy, Mr. Academy, I don't have no problem with what you did. That's good. That's good for me, Mr. Academy. Ooh, Mr. Academy, I'm glad. Mr. Oscar, you ain't got to give nothing to no black people.
Okay.
And you don't need to repeat that.
No, but I'm saying the heck of
a lot. This is free. This is why I give free advice to white people. Do not follow Uncle Tom's. They are not going to help you in terms of getting along with your fellow human beings. What was this London Daily Mail writer's name? What was his name?
His first name was Boz something. I can't remember his last name was. It's more like an African type name. He's considered as one of the best critics there is in Europe. And also, too, the girl that was on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, one of the actresses on there, said the same thing.
No, she didn't.
That, you can't sit there and pick because of. You take the best. Now, granted, when you're judging actors and actresses, it's like artwork. It's subjective. I don't think intentionally, and maybe I'm wrong.
You are. I know for a fact you're wrong.
Hollywood is the most liberal part of the country, except for maybe.
Not when it comes to honoring and giving due credit to people of color in the entertainment industry. It is not.
Well, I was going to mention to you that's the Hateful Eight. That's a Quentin Tarantino movie. Samuel L. Jackson is great. That movie didn't get nominated for anything. Not for white director, not for anything. Nobody got directed. You're nominated for anything. And it's a movie that was going to be boycotted, and I guess it was to a degree because what Tarantino said when he came to New York about the police thing. So, yeah, it does work, but I'm not sure exactly who it hurts.
I mean, what works?
I'm just saying, though, apparently the attendance of that movie has not been what they were because Tarantino came out in the...
I don't even know what that has to do with. That has anything to do with what we're talking about.
But no, I'm not saying boycotts don't work. If you want to boycott something, I grew up in the South when I remember I was living in Memphis when there was a boycott that went on just like Montgomery when I was about 10 years old. And, about the buses. But I'm saying, though, in this situation, that was a black and white case, and there's no play on words of something being wrong.
This is black and white, too. Okay, let me ask one more time.
Good.
Because you're trying to justify. You're saying that it is acceptable to you that for the past 2 years, not a single person of color has been nominated for anything. We're not talking about being given a doggone award yet, just a nomination. You're saying to me that for the past 2 years, it is acceptable that no person of color has been nominated for anything. You're saying that's acceptable.
If there's a matter of who is the best, regardless of color.
You're saying that no person of color was good enough for 2 years.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Well, then you agree with me. That's all we're saying. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. And Bill, why don't you stop? Y'all need to stop trying to play Mr. Objective. You know that makes no doggone sense. No.
Let me just say this then. Let me say this. I live in Virginia.
Because let me tell you why it makes no sense. If they had nominated, some African Americans, no white people would have been out there protesting, except the stupid fools who were mad about Star Wars. What were you about to say about Doug Wilder? This has nothing to do with you voting for Doug Wilder. Don't do that. It says, why would you identify you? Fine, you voted for Doug Wilder. What does that got to do with this?
Well, you
do. Do you work for the Academy? Do you work for the Academy?
No, I don't.
So why do some of you white people feel like you got to get in the way of something that doesn't even have anything to do with you?
I'm not saying you can do what you want to do. If you want to boycott a business, that's strictly up to you. Kohl's or anybody else, or Cadillac or American Express or Sprint for the cell phones, that's fine. I'm just saying, though, I don't think it's a very objective way to look at something that's basically a non-objective business.
You sound like this is not a bureaucratic exercise. It's not. I got to go.
Well, Andy, that's the end of the Negro show for today. One thing I'd like to point out is that I agree we should have a black-faced Negro on every product that a black-owned company owns. Yeah, like Little Black Sambo or something like that, yeah. And I've got a whole series of Amos and Andy shows here I'm going to have to play for you. Yeah, just a minute here. Why is this so weak? Why is this so weak? Let me see here. No. That's not it. Okay. Another thing I've been telling you people for a while that they want to know if these blacks want to know really what the deal was with Martin Luther King. My theory is as good as any that at any one time, there was probably a half a dozen guys working on the idea of knocking off Martin Luther King, and probably some of them were serious. And so the FBI obviously has snitches everywhere, and they get a line on this stuff, and then they just start watching them. And if it looks like somebody's got a pretty good conspiracy going and is liable to work for them, and they want to get rid of the person like Martin Luther King or anybody else, they just sort of grease the tracks and don't interfere and watch it and let him do the job. As simple as that. You know, the blacks, all these people trying to figure out, now, how did this happen? How, you know, was he Martin Luther, or was James Earl Ray a lone gunman, all that kind of stuff? It's very simple. This is a standard tactic used by the CIA and the FBI and many other intelligence agencies around the world, because they learn it all. They're all infected by ours. Incidentally, this Norwegian film, Occupation, is getting really good. It's a series. It's on Netflix. And it's how the European Union and Russia teamed up to interfere with Norway, because Norway came up with a new form called thorium, a thorium power generating, and they were going to get rid of all the oil and gas and everything, and the EU has spent billions setting up all these pipelines and everything, and they don't want Norway to get off oil and gas. They don't, Norway, and so they start interfering, and finally now they're actually moving in to occupy Norway, and there's a resistance movement, and there's quite a bit of useful information on there, not probably anything you haven't seen before, but I'd recommend this, and also it's interesting, it's taking on this anti-Russian theme, even though the EU is the big power behind the problem. And so I think you're going to see a lot more anti-Russian movies coming out of Hollywood. You just wait and see. Similar to the Cold War, when there was all these anti-Russian movies coming out. You know, it's sort of amusing that Johnny Cash sang that doo-dah song. It was real early in his career, but it's up there on YouTube. There's all kinds of these racial type songs and cartoons up there. But he would have never sung that song after June got a hold of his ass, because she turned him into a real wimp. I remember going to a concert of his in Orange County expecting to have the rough, tough cowboy outlaw music. I didn't get hardly any of that because June Carter was in with him. He's married to her, and she turned him into a Christ Insanity disciple. And he went on to sing these Christ Insanity songs, and then that one about, no, that was Elvis Presley, wasn't it? No, I think Johnny Cash sang it too. In the ghetto, this poor little black kid steals a car, gets a gun, and all that stuff. Wow. You remember this one? Remember this one? From Blazing Saddles?
Come on, boys. The way you lollygagging around here with them picks and them shovels, you'd think it was 120 degrees. Can't be more than 114. Dock that chink a day's pay for napping on the job.
Yes, sir.
Now, come on, boys. Where's your spirit? I don't hear no singing. When you were slaves, you sang like birds. Come on, how about a good old nigger work song?
I get no kick from...
You know, I never watched that movie all the way through, Blazing Saddles. It was a real put down of... It was a joke on white people. But sometimes white people deserve it, ribbing and joking. In case you're interested, they've got The Faithful Viewer, three new shows with religious subplots. January TV premieres include, quote, You, Me, and the Apocalypse, quote, Mercy Street, and, quote, Lucifer. Three films that have a religious basis, so that'll warn you in case you want to save your money. You remember that terrorist attack on the monasteries over there in Israel? Happened about 2 or 3 weeks after I came back. And I'd been in the monastery. Well, they just arrested two Jewish teens for the Jerusalem vandalism. See, it's not terrorism when it's a Jew. It's just vandalism. Yeah, they were painting anti-Christian graffiti scrawled on a Jerusalem monastery. Police said on Wednesday after Prime Minister Benjamin Nitwit ordered investigation into the latest wave of hate crimes. The 16 and 15-year-old males were suspected of involvement in Hebrew curses, like Christians go to hell, that were written in felt-tip pen on the doors and walls of the Dormitian Abbey in Jerusalem's old city over the weekend, police said. The Benedictine monastery bills itself as a bastion of interfaith cooperation and understanding. It is near a site where many Christians believe Jesus held the Last Supper, as well as the tomb of the biblical King David. A big draw for pious Jews. An old terrible Tommy was in there. And that was where all the Orthodox Jews crowded around me, wanted to make me a Jew in there at the King David's tomb, which I wanted to break it open and say, prove to me that there's a David in there. But like I said, all the tour guide always said, well, we think this is where this miracle happened. We don't really have proof. Well, while I'm in Israel, let me cover a little bit more here on the West Bank. On this unauthorized hilltop outpost, the only sounds for miles around is a dog barking and a rooster crowing. Just 40 young religious Jewish families live on this windswept spot some 30 miles north of Jerusalem. And on this January day, most of their children, about 150 in total, are in school down the road at Shiloh, the nearest Jewish settlement. But Israeli authorities say the seemingly tranquil Ish Kadash and roughly 100 other settler outposts or tiny settlements built without the Israeli government approval is deceptive. They say they are breeding ground for Jewish extremism. And maybe Jewish terrorism. A small percentage of the 10,000 hilltop youths residing in the illegal outposts are suspected of attacking Palestinians or vandalizing churches and mosques on Palestinian-owned property. But their actions have elicited international condemnation and placed a spotlight on the Israeli religious Zionist community, in which most of these teens and young adults were raised and educated. The community, made up of hundreds of thousands, uses the term religious Zionist because its members support the State of Israel as well as the right of Jews to live in the captured West Bank and control the whole goddamn place, man. This be ours, man. Five of these Jews were indicted on January 3rd. Amran Ben Yul, 21, on charges of murdering three members of a West Bank Palestinian family in July 2015 of firebombing, and four others on a range of alleged offenses, including an attack on the Damatan Abbey, a Catholic community of Benedictines in Jerusalem. All of the suspects spent time at the unauthorized outposts. Is that like militia guys out in Utah? The arson, which even Israel's right-leaning politicians acknowledge as a Jewish terror attack, has left the Israelis, and particularly religious Zionists, searching for answers. Leftists accuse these Jews, many of them settlers, of turning a blind eye to extremist rabbis believed to be inciting violence. Quote, we know there are some specific rabbis who have written books saying that when it comes to a fight with the Palestinians over land, it isn't a crime to kill innocent civilians, unquote, said Yariv Oppenheimer, general director of Peace Now, an activist group in Israel that is supportive of territorial compromise. These rabbis are teaching that land is more important than the laws of the state, and no one is stopping them. But religious Zionists say the picture is more complex. Rabbi Dov Berkovitz, a moderate rabbi and educator, said most of these young extremists are high school dropouts. Didn't we hear that a few years ago about skinheads? These Jews reject religious Zionist leadership, their teachers, their parents, and their rabbis, he said. They're like juvenile street gangs in the U.S. They're disillusioned young men rebelling against authority. Berkovitz traced some of the Jews' disillusionment to the 2005 Gaza disengagement, when Israel's army uprooted 10,000 Israelis from their homes and razed their communities. In response, Hamas intensified its rocket attacks against Israel.
The disengagement was a deep psychological and ideological trauma for children and teens who were taught that settling the land is a Torah commandment, Berkovitz said. They consider the leaders of the settlement movement traitors for not preventing the disengagement. They're revolting against their elders. Jimmy Kaplan, an expert in Jewish extremism at Bar-Ilan University, said young Israelis and Palestinian extremists are products of the same conflict. Not to justify their violent acts in any way, but it should be said that when someone lives in an ongoing violent atmosphere, it will have an influence. When their actions are backed up by rabbis or imams associated with fringe groups, it can influence teens. So they're gonna go nuts, man. They're gonna go nuts. Anyhow, it goes on and on talking about Jewish extremism or terrorism, but you never read any of that in the American papers, do you? I never see that stuff on television, and I've been looking for a long time. Yeah. One bunch of extremists to another bunch of extremists. An armed group that has taken over the National Wildlife Refuge to protest federal land use policies continues to escalate the situation by introducing a common law grand jury, which has no actual legal standing. They have chosen Joaquin Mariano de Moreta Fultz, St. Augustine Tea Party government accountability chairman and a longtime proponent of convening secret citizen panels to indict government officials, to be their common law judge. And at a recent event held at the refuge in New Mexico, rancher Adrian Sewell of Grant County, New Mexico, renounced his federal grazing contract from the U.S. Forestry Service. Wow. Oregon officials want the militia to leave, saying it's been far past time for occupation to end. But it doesn't look like the leader of the militia, Amon Bundy, is ready to end the standoff. Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. Bundy walked out of a private meeting with the federal agents on Friday after the agent refused to speak in the presence of the media, according to the Associated Press. Bundy also questioned the FBI authority, telling an agent, if you haven't got sanction from the sheriff, there is no reason to be talking to you. We went through this kind of stuff about 30 years ago. It got really hot that way, and a lot of people went to prison, a lot of people went to jail, and nothing really was accomplished. On Wednesday, Oregon Governor Kate Brown said the occupation was costly to taxpayers, like a governor worried about the taxpayers, and sent a letter to FBI Director James Comey and U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, telling them to end the occupation of federal land as safely and as quickly as possible. Kill those motherfuckers. Earlier in the month, Oregon Sheriff Dave Ward met Amon Bundy in a near the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, and Ward encouraged Bundy to leave town and told Bundy he would offer a safe escort out. Bundy and the group of armed men he leads have threatened to kill law enforcement if they try to intervene. So this offer, while intended to spare human lives, is fairly extraordinary when compared to other protests. Yet Bundy lectured the sheriff on the Constitution and said, don't these guys know that the Constitution has been dead since the Civil War? Don't they understand what federal courts are all about? They still think there's something to the Constitution. Not. According to Oregon Live, Bundy told the sheriff, until we can see that there is a great momentum and that people can get along that themselves, then we will remain. That could be a week, that could be a year, man. We got plenty of guns. After their discussion, the group bulldozed a fence that divided private ranch lands from public land and damaged Native American archaeological sites. Oh boy. Now the Mongols are getting pissed off. Last week, two members of the militia were arrested after driving two federal vehicles to a local Safeway. It doesn't look like the situation will de-escalate soon, considering that the armed group that has been occupying federal land for a few weeks, federal land that isn't worth a shit, except maybe it could feed a couple of cows with 1,000 acres. The militia, which has partnered with well-known conspiracy theorists, wants to create an alternative legal system in the region that would replace Harney County's elected leaders and the sheriff with those who support the sovereign citizen movement. Now, I've been dealing with that sovereign citizen movement for 25 years, and believe me, you want to stay away from them. They're the ones that don't think they have to have driver's licenses or license plates on their cars. Don't get near them. They're wacko. I mean, no matter if there is any basis to their argument, you can't enforce it unless you're going to go to war with guns shooting. Not talking, shooting. The movement is a group of people who believe they are not subject to the laws and orders of the federal government. Well, I'm telling you, man, you're a working class slave and you don't know it. And if they decide to come down on you, you're going to be squashed like a bug. If the local officials govern closely to federal government rules, their authority is moot, according to the movement's ideology. Yeah, I've been hearing that. I've been hearing that ever since the tax rebellion in 1972 or 3. Believe me, I've been through this over and over again, and it never ends well. You got to let global warming and a lot of other significant issues, more and more imported terrorism, all that, before you'll ever get any place. You got to wait. You got to wait this thing out a little bit. If you stick your chin out there and your head, they're going to chomp it off. Don't put your head in the lion's mouth, baby. If you do anything, you got to sneak up behind the lion and ram a pole up his butt. But don't ever get in front of him. Well, I see volunteers from Chicago find friends in the militia at a Flint water crisis rally held by the Genesee County Volunteer Militia. There were two unlikely guests, black attorney Lamont Williams and his younger brother, I guess it is. Well, the Flint people have more of a more legal standing to revolt than the militia out west does. Remember, 38% of those people in Flint are white. But I have a theory about this, that when something is bad going down, and it's primarily a large percentage of blacks living in the area, they do ignore it, even though there's 38% white there. They're not going to help the whites because they can cover their ass by not helping the blacks. I mean, if that makes sense to you, it does to me. I don't think there's any more white-hating Jew than Bill Maher, the comedian. He's not funny. Here he goes after the militia. Now, I have criticism of the militia because I don't want to see good white men get killed. But this guy, Maher, would like to see him killed. Let's listen to this.
And finally, new rules. Someone needs to tell those wackadoodle militiamen who took over a federal building in the middle of nowhere in Oregon that to be a hero, you need something to be heroic about. These guys keep promising to occupy that building until, well, we're not sure. And they're not sure. Something about redneck lives matter. Just listen here to one of them, Patriot John Ritzheimer, explaining to his kids in a video he posted from his truck why he had to leave.
It's going to be one of the tougher videos I've had to make. Your daddy swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. And that's why he couldn't be with you on Christmas.
Wow, seems like a lot of trouble to go to just to get out of spending time with your family over the holidays. Why not just drink like the rest of us? Now, of course, I'm probably being too cynical about this whole thing. After all, you can't doubt the passion in that video when he tells his kids, Daddy swore an oath
and that's why I can't be home. Except, John, you can be home. How? Get out of your truck and go back inside. And not to be cruel, but how tough can you rugged individualists be when the first thing you did after storming the rest stop was to post an appeal online for supplies, a shopping list, really, that included such items as throw rugs, shampoo, foot warmers, and French vanilla coffee creamer. What, no scrunchies so you can braid each other's hair? And I don't know if you know this, but if you're such ready-to-die patriots, America has actual wars available.
Well, while I do criticize the right wing a lot and even make fun of them sometimes, people like Bill Maher, I have a special feeling in my heart for this guy. He's a Jew. Well, I want to make a joke about the guy. Two Jews walk into a bar and to get in the Auschwitz. And one says to the bartender, well, I can make up a whole bunch of jokes about Jews in the ghetto, Jews in the concentration camps. How would he like that? I think I'll sit down and do that. And it's amazing how brave these Hollywood types, these New York types, get when they're talking about the right-wingers and people like that, because right-wingers can kill. I have no doubt about that. I have no doubt about that. And with global warming coming on and all the disruption by Mother Nature and attacks on the system by blacks, whites, and everybody else, these guys better find a hole to climb down, because if they ever catch them, they're going to be in real trouble. All this political name-calling reminds me of the movie All Quiet on the Western Front. When Wallace Berry says instead of having wars, they should get a big arena with a rope around it and put these world leaders in the middle with baseball bats. And that's what I think of every time one of these fat-ass politicians starts screaming at each other and insulting each other. Get in the goddamn ring. Here's a baseball bat. Fight it out. I don't think you'd see many of them hanging around and saying nasty things. And I'm not talking about Trump. I'm talking about all the other people. Secretary Gates just climbed into it, slamming Trump. Well, I don't know whether Trump could hold his own with a baseball bat inside a ring or not, but if he's as good as his mouth, he probably can. That's a great scene with Wallace Berry. If you ever watch All Quiet on the Western Front, it's a very, very much anti-war film, one of the great ones. Another one is Red Badge of Glory, and Sergeant Reiner, World War II movie. There's a lot of good anti-war movies like Deer Hunter and even Apocalypse Now, after you get past that scene with forget his name. I love the smell of napalm in the morning and all that shit, you know. We'll let Sarah Palin have a rolling pin. I think she could do a pretty good job of the rolling pin. Boys and girls, I can't take it much longer here. The hilarity of the politics and the hilarity of all the saber rattling all over the world just breaks me up. I can't take any more. I'll be back. Wait a minute, this is Tuesday, right? Yeah, this is Tuesday. You know, my clock don't say what day it is. I don't have a calendar right here. But anyhow, no, today's Monday. This is Moonsday. I'll be back tomorrow on Tearsday. In the meantime, we'll close out with another version of Doo-Dah, Doo-Dah. I used to have some Klan members who used to always go around going, Doo-Dah, Doo-Dah. Thank you.
just sing this song.
Doo-dah, doo-dah.
The Cape Town racetrack by Malone.
Oh, doo-dah day.
I went down there when my hat came in.
Doo-dah, doo-dah.
I come back home with a pot full of tin.
Oh, doo-dah day. Wanna run all night, wanna run all day.
I'll bet my money on the bobtail nag. Somebody bet on the bay. And the big black horse.
Doo-dah, doo-dah.
They fly down the track and they both cut across.
Oh-dee-doo-dah-day.
The blind horse sticking in a big mud pole.
Doo-dah, doo-dah.
They can't touch bottom with a 10-foot.